Welcome to Inflection Point, interviews with women changing the status quo. Title IX was passed in 1972 to ensure that all girls have equal access to sports.
Young girls who have a chance to participate in sports have their life altered forever.
But does it have any effect outside of the game itself?
Everything I've learned on the soccer field is way beyond just soccer.
It's not that, oh, when women are in charge, it's going to be better. It's that you want that diversity of leadership.
Brandi Chastain of World Cup fame and Missy Park, the founder and CEO of apparel company Title IX. The power of sports for girls. That's our inflection point. Stay tuned. In 1999, Brandi Chastain became famous for, well, ripping her shirt off, but it was in celebration for her World Cup winning penalty kick and inspired a new generation of girls to take up the sport of soccer. Brandi Chastain, welcome to Inflection Point.
Well, thank you very much. It's very nice to be here.
So 1999 was such a significant moment for women in soccer and for women in pro sports. I've got to start by asking you, why do you think, with all that momentum behind us, collectively as women, we are still lagging so far behind the guys in terms of awareness of women professional sports and even people just tuning in to watch what's happening on the court or on the field?
Well, I think you have to look at the history of sport in this country, dominated by males. And so we're a little bit behind in that way. I think that's, you know, the starting point. And so like anything, I think soccer is a perfect example. It takes a while for the general public or those who consume sports to allow something new to come in. And so that's a slow trickle. It's like that drip that's coming out of your sink that you think, oh, it's only a drip. But then, you know, what you hope is collectively together that's a lot of water coming out of there. So, you know, for us, it's been a slow trickle. I think from the outside looking at it, it's taken even longer. But I think being inside of it, you know, since the first World Cup, 1991, we're significantly different than we were at that time. But I think we're still, as women, I mean, even if you take yourself out of sport and you look at business or you look at, you know, in positions of power, we're still behind. And that takes time, my mom said. You know, all good things to those who wait. And I'm trying to use patience in these moments, but I'm eager for them to, you know, I think make this big leap to being more mainstream, more general, and to being on the same level.
So what do you think it will take? Do you think it will take another, you know, the Women's World Cup is coming up again this summer. Do you think it's going to take another injection of adrenaline during the series of those games? Or what do you or do you think it really is just a slow drip, that it's not just going to be, you know, one big thing is going to change everything?
I think it's a lot of things coming together and, you know, happening at the same time and kind of colliding. And, you know, Women's World Cup obviously brings a lot of attention. You know, since 99, not that 91 or 95 weren't significant, but just the stage and the setting and the overall number of people that participated, whether playing or as fans, in person or on, you know, through the television, you know, grown significantly. And I think there's always the worry that when you have something big like that that's happened and that's the first time, will it happen again? So there's always that concern, and you can never have another first. So how do you build upon that first? I think it's really been the talking point. And how will then that, these next subsequent tournaments, impact the outcome of, you know, having a professional league or the amount of girls that play or women in sports in general or women in business or women overall? So it's a lot of heavy baggage to carry. But it is significant, and things do come from it, and we just have to take, you know, those moments that we have, like a World Cup, and use them for good. And ultimately, the question you're asking is, what will it take?
Right.
I mean, I think that's, you know, that's if we could find the answer, that's the gold mine. That's really the difference maker. But I really think what's happening is young girls who have a chance to participate in sports have their life altered forever. And they have a chance to learn the lessons that that sport really have to offer to males or females. And it just so happens that our young boys have had the luxury of getting those lessons much earlier. And now what's happening is because boys and girls are playing on the playground together, that the difference between them when it comes to making big decisions, being intellectual, you know, those, it's getting less and less of a divide. And so now those women who have opportunities to make choices in powerful positions can choose things like women's sports as a vehicle to get out a greater message, or can support a women's sports team or league. And that's what it takes for me, from my perspective.
Well, it's just been a couple of generations since Title IX was passed, the law Title IX that required girls to have access to sports in school. And, you know, just talking about this, do you think that a law like that still has relevance today? Do you think that having that requirement is still really important?
Yes, it is important. And even though young girls today, if I mention Title IX, they look at me like, what is that? It still impacts them, because at some point, if that was taken away, I remember Julie Foudy was working on when I think President Bush, the younger, was in office, they wanted to get rid of Title IX. And that was terrifying, because you work so hard to get to a place where you seem validated and important, and to have that taken away, who knows what would happen. So it's very significant, and it's very valid, and it's very necessary.
And why do you think playing sports is important for girls in particular?
Oh, the list goes on and on.
But I
honestly believe that there's a few things that cannot be learned in other places. Leadership. The type of leadership that it takes to not only think about a group of people, but act with a group of people. And there, that is significant, because those leaders that come out of those environments understand everybody's significance and can boost those up who don't feel they have a voice, or they don't feel that they're good enough or confident enough, and they can help. So I think that's one. Leadership is truly something that is born from sport, in a way that it's not like you're sitting the kids down and saying, today we're going to learn about leadership. Now, some coaches do spend a lot of time on that, and it is really critical. But you learn that, I think, naturally in sport. How to be competitive. The world is a competitive place, and that's a good thing, because I think competition brings out the best in our potential, and maybe sometimes brings out something that maybe we didn't even know existed in us. So it's great to have young girls learn about, you know, the goal setting that it takes to be successful, the perseverance that is necessary to be a champion. And champion doesn't mean just the only one standing on the podium. So those, for me, those two are really critical, because outside the lines of the court or the soccer field or the swimming pool or wherever it is you find yourself playing sport, those things also are true in life.
And you think that it translates from
totally.
The field?
Absolutely. Everything I've learned on the soccer field is way beyond just soccer. It literally translates to being in good relationships, being a good parent, or at least attempting to be a good parent in the business world. So they're very relatable.
Can you give me an example of how that's worked for you?
Oh, okay. So I think, and confidence. I should have added confidence.
Uh-huh.
So I think those are my top three. Confidence. So when you are thrust into an environment like the one we're sitting in right now, with all these microphones and your head, you know, you're wearing the earphones and the technology and all the components that are sitting around us, it could be intimidating to be asked questions and to be on the spot. Soccer specifically has given me an opportunity to learn agility And that's not just, can I get up, go forward, go sideways, go backwards. It's also about how to think on my feet and how to feel comfortable knowing that I don't know what's going to come next. So I think that confidence to sit in this chair and to be myself and to give my opinion, I learned through sport.
Tell us about the organization you founded to connect girls and athletes. Bozzi?
So the Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative was founded 10 years ago. Initially, our intent, myself and Julie Foudy, Marlene Bjornsrud, we were devastated by the closure of the WSA for obvious reasons. We wouldn't be playing as professional soccer players anymore. But way beyond that was there wouldn't be this collective group of women who were going to be influencing the younger generation.
And the WUSA was founded shortly after you played in the Women's World Cup in 1999.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
And just give us a little bit of background on that.
Well, right after 99, we knew that, I mean, with all the support that we got, with the 90,000 plus people coming to the Rose Bowl, with, you know, tens of thousands of other people across the country going to games that U.S. was not even involved in, we knew that people enjoyed watching. We knew that they wanted to see women's soccer. And U.S. soccer was looking for a place for, you know, our players need to play somewhere once they graduate from college that will be significant enough to assist those players in either making the jump to the national team or continuing to train in one day maybe making the national team. So we knew that a league needed to start, and with a lot of hard work and a lot of support from a lot of different sponsors and owners, the WUSA was born in 2001. So it was a great day. That was a great day. 24 founding members, players who were with the national team, now scattered on different teams across the country. And so when those doors closed after the 2003 season, Julie, Marlene, and I were devastated. But we said we still need to keep women's sports alive. We need it to be in the media. We need it to be in the newspaper. We need to know that there is women out there who are doing great things in all these different sporting arenas. And there's a population that really want to know what's going on. And we need to create something to continue to highlight what female athletes are doing and how they're significant. And so even though this was that Bozzi, our Bozzi girls program was not a professional league and something a great distance away from that really in terms of the young girls who are participating, but it would impact our community in a positive way. So we started that 10 years ago with 11 girls, and we've been on the playgrounds across the Bay, you know, in Bay Area in the South. Over 16,000 girls have been on our Bozzi teams and worn their Bozzi jerseys. And we've had Stanford, Santa Clara, San Jose State, Menlo College, to name a few, some very wonderful junior colleges and high school student athletes go to the playground on a regular basis and in the fall and in the spring to invest in the future of our Bay Area and the girls that live in it, who live in underserved communities that where sport was never something that they saw in their future because either social reasons, economic reasons, geographical reasons, cultural reasons, they just didn't have the luxury to play sports. And we're not teaching how to be a world champion. We're teaching how to be in charge of who they are and who they want to become.
And Bozzi, was that, I know it's spelled B-A-W-S-I, yeah,
right.
But is the pronunciation intentional?
Well, I'll tell you, the whole thing was not intentional because initially Marlene and I, we came up with Women's Sports Initiative because it was a women's sports initiative. But people were saying, well, it needs to have an identity to where it's located so people feel connected to it. So, well, we didn't want to just be San Jose or Santa Clara. You know, well, let's be Bay Area because people understand Bay Area. So we put Bay Area before Women's Sports Initiative, and a friend called and said, this is the perfect name for you and Brandy and Julie, you know, and Marlene's like, well, why? And she said, well, because that will be, the acronym will be pronounced bossy, and you're bossy women. And Marlene's like, oh, no, no, no. She starts backpedaling. No, we don't want to do this. And she called me and I said, oh, yes, we do. We're going to get our bossy self out there because we are pretty bossy in a positive way.
Own it.
Yeah. Oh, you know, we try and explain to our girls that bossy is a term that allows you to be in charge of who you are. You're going to be bossy about yourself. You're going to take care of your health and wellness. You're going to take care of your school. You're going to take care of your friendships. You're going to take care of your community. So bossy in a positive way is what we stand for.
So what's some feedback that you've gotten from one of the girls that has participated in the program? What have they said to you about their experience?
Oh, we've had some wonderful testimonials from young girls just talking about, you know, their willingness to stand out and to be invested in the rest of their school. You know, the majority of our population of these young girls, they don't want to make waves and they don't want to almost be seen. And we've kind of given them role models from these collegiate female student athletes of why it's cool and why it's necessary and why it's important to stand out. And when you do stand out, you stand up for things that matter and you can do great things. And we've had girls who said, you know, I never once wanted to do any physical activity. And we've taught her how setting goals with her pedometer, give her a chance to be in charge of how she feels about herself and, you know, physically just feel that heart rate being elevated and what does that mean overall and how, you know, that can change the amount of times she goes to the doctor or, you know, it changes how she feels about doing her homework and it changes how she feels about her own voice being heard by others. And we've had tremendous testimonials from principals. You know, the playground used to look like little boys, and now the bossy girls come shooting out of their doors as recesses, you know, the bell goes off and at lunchtime. And now they're grabbing the ball first, and they're being involved, and now they're playing together. And so, you know, I don't know if these young girls really can see the big picture because it's hard to step back when you're third through fifth grade. but the principals have. And these little girls are changing their community because their dads are seeing them participate in sports. Their brothers are seeing them participate in sport. And they're recognizing that this is something that's important for those girls. And so culturally, it's shifting what otherwise was a terribly male-dominated environment, and now it's kind of the balance is getting more even.
We're talking to Brandi Chastain, whose winning penalty kick won the World Cup in 1999. I'm Lauren Schiller. This is Inflection Point. We'll be back right after this. Hi, I'm Lauren Schiller. If you're enjoying Inflection Point, help us make more episodes. You can donate to the show on inflectionpointradio.org. Just go to the website and look for the donate button. It's super simple, and we will really appreciate it. Thank you. You're listening to Inflection Point. I'm Lauren Schiller. My guest is Brandi Chastain, whose winning penalty kick won the World Cup in 1999. And in addition to the work that you're doing at Bossy, you're coaching a few teams as well.
I am.
So who are you coaching? List them off.
Well, I have a wonderful eclectic teams that are in my life, thankfully. My young son is 8 and he plays, and so I'm coaching or helping coach his under-9 boys soccer team. So that's, you know, the herding cats phrase is used a lot, but it's definitely like that. And it's, you know, it's challenging in a way that it's not only coaching soccer, but it's coaching life skills about patience and, you know, waiting your turn and the other things that come in with that. And then I have the collegiate female athlete at Santa Clara University. My husband's been the head coach there for, this will be his 29th season. And so I'm the official volunteer. I'm on the field with those women. And these are people who are thinking about their life. You know, this is the jumping off point for who they want to be in their business career or in their sport career. And that's an interesting place to be in, you know, really important. And then I took on coaching high school boys varsity. I'm the assistant coach for the varsity team. And it was a great in-between. They were very accepting and very respectful. And I felt as a woman, it was a real powerful place to be because it's important for young men to understand that there will be women in power, women in authority, women who know things and who can articulate those things and even physically show them some things. And it was a great chance for me to test my mettle and for me to be able to look at me and say, go out there with confidence and great conviction and be the best coach for them that you can be.
So as part of the coaching team at Santa Clara University with your husband, mm-hmm. which you were at Santa Clara University and he was the coach, and that is how you met? Is that right?
We met through soccer, but okay. We didn't meet there.
Okay.
We had previously met.
Okay. So you both have had a history with SCU.
Right.
Do you ever have a difference of opinion on how?
We have a difference of opinion every day. Yes.
Specifically, I was going to ask about coaching, but if you want to talk about other stuff, we could do that too.
Yes. But, you know, I think the interesting thing about being a coach and coaching with someone that you're married to, or even coaching with someone who you've just met, which would have been the situation for myself at Bellarmine with our head coach, is it's good to have a different opinion because, you know, I feel like I'm also the head coach of the 2000 age group for the region, which is the 12 states in the Western region 4, which is 12 states in our Western United States. So I have just asked one of my ex-teammates, Tiffany Milbritt, to be my assistant. And I asked her because we come from different perspectives. We see soccer similarly in ways and completely different in other ways. And I thought that that was important for me. Either I really believed in something and I needed to hash it out with somebody who saw it differently and maybe I keep the same perspective or maybe I change it a little bit. So I wanted to be challenged in that way. So we, my husband and I, see things very similarly in a lot of cases, but also really differently in a lot of respects. And to be the assistant, you know, your opinion matters, but the head coach is going to make the choices. And that's okay because that also is a part of learning. You know, your way is not always going to be the way you go. And so I have to handle that. And that's important for me too.
How did you get introduced to soccer?
Very randomly. And no one in my family knew soccer. And yet we signed up because my parents saw that they had a very rambunctious, very sport-driven young girl. And I would play anything in the street with anybody who would participate with me. And if I think tree climbing or jumping off the roof was an Olympic sport, I probably would have done those things too. And it just so happened that soccer came to our neighborhood. And so they said, hey, let's give this a try. So I really owe a depth of gratitude to my parents for so many things, but for them having the vision without the experience to get involved with something and then support it. My dad became my coach. He didn't know anything. We went to the library. We got books. We watched VHS tapes. Yes, those, you know, that's what we watched. There was one soccer program a week, and we were full in. He was invested. My mom was invested. And so they really were the driving force, but not in a pushy way, just as in let's give it a try. And it just turned out wonderfully.
Are you still playing?
I play only a little bit, mostly at practice. You know, I realized 2 years ago when my son started playing on teams himself that for me to be the player that I wanted to be, you know, I played on a team in Sacramento, so that's 2 hours from home. So I drive 2 hours. You get there early, then you play the game, and then you drive home 2 hours. That the commitment for me was too much, that I didn't want to miss what was happening with him or at home. And so I play with the girls at Santa Clara. I play with the guys at Bellarmine. With Jaden's team. And so I get enough soccer that I'm not void of soccer in terms of kicking the ball around. And I find a pickup game every now and again.
So what's the best advice you've ever gotten about leadership?
One of my grandfathers was a very big influence on me in my sporting career because, one, he was always there. You know, just I was so grateful for his presence, because he not only would come to my games, but we would play basketball down at the school, and he always was involved. So just his support was tremendous. But he used to give me a dollar when I scored a goal. And I thought that was great, because back then I could buy like 100 scoops of ice cream for a dollar. And but when I made an assist, he gave me $1.50. And so pretty quickly I realized that, you know, I wanted to score, and that was my personality. I mean, I was driven to get the ball and make the difference and be the one. But that $1.50 was kind of in the back of my head. Like, if I gave something to someone, I would get more in return. And so that lesson about giving is really important, supporting other people, you know, being a good teammate. It took me a while. I have to say I was a very selfish player when I was younger. And I think that's something most kids, you know, they look inward first. You know, they take care of themselves first. And so that was a hard lesson for me to learn the outward. But my grandfather was persistent. And so I think that's really the greatest gift that anybody's given me in terms of lessons and how applicable it was in every walk of my life. I don't even know that he set out to do that, but he really made a great impression on me.
Well, Brandy, you've made an incredible impression on millions of girls.
Oh, thank
and
you
women
so much.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and I mean, and men everywhere. And you've been such an inspiration. And I asked you to bring with you things that inspire you. So, and I see this whole array in front of me. Can you tell us what you brought in with you?
Yes. Yeah, so I have quite a few things here. I have my soccer cleats and my soccer ball. They are always in my car, so they go with me everywhere. And They can be an inspiration just looking at them, but they can all of a sudden spring into action at any point. So they're ready to play. I have a photo of my son, who obviously, as a parent, you understand, you know, your children are precious. And he just reminds me why I do things, how I do things, and with what kind of conviction I should do things. So I love looking at him. I love being with him. And I love him as a reminder of, you know, I'm walking through this journey and I should walk gently at times and thoughtfully and compassionately. I also have my calendar, which is, I can hand write on my calendar. It's paper, which I have right next to me, my phone as well, because on there is also the calendar, which, you know, I think that these things connect us to other people that we don't get to see every day. So that's important. But my calendar, because if I had to try to remember all the things I had to do, it would be impossible. So I have my calendar, and then my sunglasses, because my friends will know, oh, it's so Hollywood, Julie Foudy would say. But I like to believe that every day is very sunny. And I wear my sunglasses because they make me happy and they make me feel like every day is a sunny day. So those are just some things that I have that remind me of my daily life and who I am.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for coming in, Brandy Chastain.
It's my pleasure.
Coming up in the second half of the show, we'll talk to Missy Park, founder and CEO of apparel company Title IX. Stay tuned. I'm Lauren Schiller, and you're listening to Inflection Point. Hi, I'm Lauren Schiller. If you're liking what you hear, help us make more episodes. You can find our teeny tiny little donate button at inflectionpointradio.org. Just scroll down to the bottom of the page, click the donate button, and fill out the simple form. If you've got bigger aspirations and would like to underwrite our show, you can email me directly at lauren@inflectionpointradio.org. That's Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, @inflectionpointradio.org. In fact, I'd love to hear from all of you. Thanks. This is Inflection Point. I'm Lauren Schiller. Before women reporters were let into the men's locker rooms, before we had a female referee for the NFL, we had Title IX, a law passed in 1972 that requires gender equity for boys and girls in sports. And one of the first women to benefit from this law named her women's sportswear company after that landmark law. Missy Park, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So why did you name your company after the 1972 law?
Oh, boy. Well, I guess the easiest and most obvious answer is that it was that Title IX, when it passed, it changed my life. I was born in 1962 and in a small town in South Carolina, and I started high school in 1976, which was the first year schools had to be in compliance with Title IX. So I was in that first generation of girls that went all the way through high school and all the way through college, being able to play interscholastic sports. So when it came my time to try and start a company, Title IX seemed like the obvious name to have.
And why did you start Title IX?
Oh, my goodness. You got to have all day for that. Why did I start Title IX? Well, I would say it was the naivete and maybe slight bravado of a 26-year-old, thinking that, wow, yeah, I can play, but I don't have any gear to play in. So when I graduated from college and spent the better part of my basketball career in men's basketball shoes and men's uniforms, I decided there's got to be a better way. And fortunately, there were a lot of other like-minded people manufacturing clothes, starting to think about women runners and women hikers and women cyclists. And I just decided, wow, it would be great to find a place or start a place where women could find workout gear.
And what year was that?
1989. 26 years old.
Oh, man. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Wait, so your company is the same age that you were when you started it? Am I getting
yes.
this right?
Yes. Ooh, very good math. Ooh. Very good math. Very good math. Yes, it was. Yes.
The law Title IX went into effect over 40 years ago.
Yes.
And it's fundamentally changed girls' access to sports. Yes. How far do you think women have really come as a result?
Holy smokes. I mean, I can give you one great example. I mean, it's sort of a sports example, but my daughter, who is now, gosh, 16, one day when she was about 6 or 7, we were driving by these practice fields in Berkeley, and there were some boys playing soccer. And my daughter said to me, "Mama, boys play sports?"
That's funny.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, for me to hear that, one, it also made me, what kind of world am I creating for my daughter a little bit?
Did she go to an all-girls school?
No, she didn't, but there weren't sports in school yet, you know? So, yeah, so that is a dramatic change. And then just the blessings that sports have always brought to boys now come to girls and teach all those great lessons about teamwork and leadership and power. I mean, it's just been a sea change in the way women start to interact with the world.
Well, what are some examples that you've seen of the result of girls playing sports that has come to bear in their actual lives? Because you're coaching
right.
little bit, so you're interacting. I mean, are you coaching girls?
Or yes. Okay. Well, I coach girls and boys. So the boys I coach are now bigger than me, which is another whole dynamic.
Right.
For me, sport is probably the best classroom there is for what life is about. It teaches resiliency. I love basketball, and I have to say I can admit it now that I no longer coach it. I don't really love soccer. And I love basketball because it gives you multiple opportunities for success and failure. The kid scores on you, you got to get back and score on them. Whereas soccer, man, you make one mistake, game over, 1-0, you lose.
Right. You know? The number of points you have the opportunity to
yes.
get is a lot lower.
Yes, exactly. So just from a teaching standpoint or educational philosophy standpoint, I love basketball because there are multiple chances for success and failure, and that teaches resilience. And I am a big team sports fan because I think that everything is about a team. The communities we live in are teams. The places we work are teams. Teaching kids how to be a part of a team, even when they don't get their way, it's a lot easier to teach them than it is to teach adults that. So starting early is good.
Well, as a company built by a woman and
yes.
for women, what differences have you noticed between men and women as they work their way up through your company?
Wow. Well, you know, I can talk in generalities.
Or give me an example.
Yes, I can talk in generalities and I'll give you an example. The generalities are, and the specific example, when I've offered a guy, and I haven't had too much deep work experience outside of Title IX. I'm disbelieving that I have been at the same place for 25 years. But before that, I did have other jobs, and I managed at other places. And I got to tell you, whenever I would talk to a guy about a possible promotion, it's about damn time you figured out how awesome I am. You know, it could be president, it could be president of the United States. They are ready. Whereas when I talk to women within Title IX and in my other businesses that I've been a part of, they're never quite sure they're ready. And so it not only becomes like offering a job, but selling them that they can do the work and they can lead. And they don't need to know all the answers to get started trying. I think that's probably the biggest difference for me between men and women, is that women kind of want to know a lot, or at least most of the answers, before they start trying, and certainly before they start leading. Whereas guys are happy to step up and lead no matter how little they know.
And you found that to just be a universal truth?
Okay, boy. I mean, universal truth, I'll say universal in my small world.
Okay.
Certainly there are exceptions on both sides of it. I work with some great guys now, and I would say it is certainly not universal for them. They seem to have the right amount of self-doubt. And neither one is right or wrong, right? I mean, you want people to have the confidence to try something they don't know how to do. I love that. At the same time, you know, I would appreciate someone to be a little bit more thoughtful before jumping into something they don't know how to do. So maybe it's just a blend is
well,
the best.
What do you think will happen as more women are decision makers in business?
You know, was it Madeleine Albright who said that people that think the world would be a better place if women were leaders never went through seventh grade?
What do you think she meant by that?
Well, I just think what you want is differences. You want diversity of leadership. And I think that's what I look at. It's not that, oh, when women are in charge, it's going to be better. It's that you want that diversity of leadership. You want that thoughtful approach. You also want that go-for-it approach.
And I've read that you believe in this idea of success by failure. Is that just something I read, or is that actually a philosophy you go by?
So I guess it's ready, aim, fire. I have to always remind myself of what it is, because for me, it's fire, ready, aim. And if you listen to people that work with me, they'll say, no, Missy, it's not fire, ready, aim. It's fire, 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 fire. So obviously, if you are a fire-ready aim, which is what I claim to be, if you're a fire-ready aim kind of person, you have to be comfortable with a lot of mistakes. I like the philosophy of show me someone who's never made a mistake, and I'll show you someone who's never made anything.
Well, what do you think of, just thinking about the fashion industry for a minute, the market has changed so much.
Yes.
I have to say, as a personal user of said clothing,
yes,
that it's not just about playing. I'm an athletic person, but I'm also, yeah, I also go out and when I'm not trying to be sweaty, and I wear
yes,
clothes that could be,
yeah,
defined both,
sure,
ways in both situations. But it seems like it has taken on, you know, style,
yes,
is a big deal, but also this idea of sexiness,
yeah,
and fashion taking over sports apparel on the runway and putting on makeup on sports figures as they walk down wearing, you know, their sports gear. So what is your opinion of this showcasing of sporty athletic women wearing sporty athletic gear in a fashion setting?
Well, I guess what I have to say about that is strong is sexy, and I'm glad. You know, strong wasn't always sexy, and I got to tell you, if those girls, my pal Sally, who founded Wazelle, she was one of the first ones to bring her totally badass women runners to the runway in New York during Fashion Week. And I got to tell you, it was so refreshing to see that rather than these emaciated, chain-smoking girls, and have that to be what my daughter is aspiring to. You know, strong is sexy, and that's great. So for me, I'm in favor of strong women getting up on the runway and showing their stuff, and for their clothes to look great. And if they make them feel the better, All the better.
And your friend, what is Wazelle?
Yeah, Wazelle, it's my friend Sally Bergeson, and she is the founder of Wazelle, which is another women's athletic apparel, particularly running apparel clothing. And she is really pushing. We actually did a partnership to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Title IX. And we came up with all these T-shirts. And one of the ones we came up with, it's Strong is the New Strong. We had another one that was great. It was a Monopoly card, and it said Title IX, and it had a little Monopoly card that says, get out of cheerleading free.
I was a cheerleader, just FYI.
It was the only option you had. And now I'm glad that people have more options than just being cheerleaders. I'm all good with cheerleading, but I like it when there are more options than just cheerleading.
Well, Missy, what would you still like to see change for women? You know, we're moving from sexy is, you know, is strong, and more women are in charge, but there's still a long way to go. I mean, as you look at things from your point of view, what do you think still needs to happen?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is in our own hands, and I'll give some examples of that. I think I will be happy when I am coaching a team and I ask for a volunteer to help me assistant coach, and I also have them. I have folks volunteer for any number of jobs, assistant coach, the team snap coordinator, the snack coordinator. And I'll think I will be really happy when we get to the point where women don't automatically volunteer to be the snack coordinator and maybe consider being the assistant coach, because they're the adult and the kids are 10 years old and anybody can be an assistant coach. So for me, just on that micro level, what I'll be happy with is when girls and women say, you know what, yeah, I played basketball in high school, or I played soccer in college. I am perfectly capable of coaching 10-year-olds. And I don't see a lot of that yet. I do coach, and the higher you get up in the coaching ranks, the fewer and fewer women there are. And it's not because there aren't good women out there. The best example I can think of is early on when I was coaching and I asked for a volunteer, every dad volunteered, none of whom had ever played soccer before, and sitting on the sidelines was a mom who had played Division I college soccer and didn't think she was ready to assistant coach her 10-year-old daughter. So what do I want to see change? I want moms off of the sidelines and onto the fields, or at least carrying the clipboard and drawing up the plays.
We're talking with Missy Park, founder and CEO of apparel company Title IX. We'll be back right after this. Hi, I'm Lauren Schiller, and I hope you're enjoying Inflection Point. You can show us how much you like us by going to our Facebook page at facebook.com/inflectionpointradio, or follow me on Twitter at LA Schiller. Plus, sign up for weekly email updates at inflectionpointradio.org. You're listening to Inflection Point. I'm Lauren Schiller. My guest is Missy Park, founder and CEO of apparel company Title IX. As the coach for your son's basketball team, do you ever get any guff because you are a woman?
You know, I'll tell you, my son asked me just a question that I'm still trying to get my mind around. He said, Mama, do you think you would be a better basketball coach if you were a man? Now, there are just so many layers to that. Some of them I cannot even think about. But you know what I realized as I kind of worked through it, I realized there were some things he was thinking about. But when I really went through it and I talked with him, I hated it because it was such an adult answer, but it is also one that I believe to be true. I think that I am a different coach because I'm a woman, and I have better relationships with the refs. That's what I can say for sure. I never get into a big battle with the refs, but I always feel like they're on my side. We're working on it together as a team. You know, if you watch basketball, you watch the NBA playoffs now, or you watch the women's Final Four, there can be a lot of getting into it with the refs. But as a woman, I feel like there's another way for me to make my voice heard. So, yeah, I think there, I don't know that I necessarily get guff. I might not be asked out for beers as often, but that's okay because I don't drink anyway.
Well, when you watch kids play sports and you watch girls play and you watch boys play, do you see any of those dynamics that you were talking about in the workplace, in raising their hand at play on the field?
Well, I'll give you a good example, yeah. And I love sharing this example because everybody, I love hearing people's response to it. A friend of mine has been a coach and an educator for many, many years, and she always holds on to teaching a middle school PE class, and it's a co-ed class. And she's a very good athlete, a former professional athlete, and good at everything. And she's first day of class, she'll bring her kids together, you know what, they're fifth grade. And they actually happen to have a football field on their campus, and she'll stick a football on a tee at about the 40-yard line, which is a nice long field goal if you could put it through the uprights, right? And she steps up, and she boots the ball, and it falls well short of going through the uprights. And then she says, okay, how many of you think you can kick the ball through the uprights? Not one girl raises her hand, and every boy, yeah, me, I can kick it through the uprights. I know you couldn't, coach, but I can. Now, there's part of me that's like, wow, those boys, they're idiots. They're delusional, right? You could say that. Or it's like, or the other thing is they just want to try. And I guess that's what I would say. I would love the wisdom of the girl to know, like, I don't think I can kick it through the uprights, but I'd still like to try. And I think that's, for me, what I see is the differences. And not to a person. I coached a number of super gung-ho girls? Yes. And I love them. And have I coached more thinking and cerebral boys? Yes. And I love those guys as well. But my hope would be, like we said about the world of work, that girls could learn some of that gusto and enthusiasm and go for it in spite of what seemed to be insurmountable odds. And boys could learn a little bit more of ready aim. You know?
Well, thinking about the future and the increasing number of girls that are playing sports and the increasing number of women that are getting into leadership positions, what would your wish be for women in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, as a woman leader yourself, I mean, what would you project as you look to the future and said, you know, this is how the world should work?
Wow, this is how the world should work.
You can have anything you want.
That's a huge question. Well, what I think the future is going to be is a lot how I see these boys and girls being raised now. And the future is they have very different expectations of the role of work, the role that they should play in the community. And so when I look at the kids that are my own and the ones that I coach, I'm optimistic, so I don't have to wave a magic wand is what I want to say. If you have to fight for a seat at the table and what you bring with you every day versus, I already have a seat at the table. I'm good. I'm confident. And I think that's what girls are growing up with. A lot of people say, oh, girls these days, they're so entitled. I don't feel that at all. I feel like they are confident and they know they belong. They don't have to fight for what they want necessarily, but there's a confidence that comes with knowing you belong that I think is going to change the way work and women and power and leadership. So when you ask me, what do I hope for change? I already see that change.
What do you personally like about playing sports? I mean, you still are very actively playing. Are you still playing basketball?
I play basketball less and less, but yeah, I still do play basketball with my son and my daughter. I enjoy it. Sometimes we even have little 3-on-3 tournaments at Title IX. At times they don't end well.
Meaning what? I'll just say,
there are sometimes injuries and sometimes anger, which is good. We get to explore women's relationship to power and leadership and conflict.
Yeah, interesting. So, like when they win, you mean?
Win or lose, or, you know, you're calling your own fouls. Was it? I mean, right? I mean, that's the great lessons that sports teach. And, you know, even, and it's not just sports, like taking the lessons that we learn from sports and moving them in to the business world and into our communities, how we disagree, how we lose and still stay on board with the team. You know, that's the thing I love about working at Title IX is just all of the dynamics that come up in working with a lot of women and exploring the dynamics of power and leadership, women and work and work-life balance. And then, oh my gosh, you can't even imagine the battles we get into around the images that we're going to put on the internet or in print. The images of women in the media, I mean, we're grappling with that every day. And it's women grappling with that. We want the stuff to sell. We want it to look good. But that's just the price of admission. It has to work well. And our models, who are actually not models at all, they're real people, they have to be strong and confident and competent, and they have to inspire not just our customers, but the next generation of our customers to want to lean in and take risks. So that's a really high bar, but it's also fun because we get to explore, like, well, what does it mean to take risk? And when does risk become too scary? That's a conversation that we're having all the time. Like, okay, that's a pretty high leap she's fixing to take off of that cliff. Is that going to be daunting to our customer, or is it going to be inspiring to her? And the dialogue we have about what is daunting and what is inspiring, I mean, it really goes back to, wow, does that look so hard? I can't even try.
So much conversation happens around Photoshop and adjusting images for the media and this idea of what is the perfect woman look like. And you're wrestling with that from kind of a different angle. But what's your point of view on that adjustment that you have?
It is such a great question. It's a daily question that we have. Photoshop. First of all, I want to just talk about our customer. She owns her imperfections. She's a mom. I like to think of her as a mortal mom, you know, and she is perfectly imperfect. And she stopped listening to the fashion police, or at least she's trying. And she expects to see herself or a little piece of herself. So we have big conversations about Photoshop, and it's important to leave the imperfections in. Like, they need to be real women. And we want to be able to say that every time, like, oh, can we just smooth that out a little bit? I'm like, no, we cannot smooth it out a little bit. Because every time we do that, we're lying just a little bit. But in the Photoshop generation, I got to tell you, we'll get some of these rad pictures where these women are on their mountain bikes and they've gotten total air. And my daughter will go, so how'd you Photoshop that in?
So no one even believes
it. So they don't even believe it anyway. But I think if we keep saying and keep trying to live and have these hard conversations, people will eventually recognize the underlying authenticity about the way we approach our photography.
What is the best leadership advice you've ever gotten?
You know, I think it's actually more life advice is what I would say. And that is fail faster to succeed sooner. And sort of the corollary to that is, if you wait to have all the information to decide, it's too late. And I think that's where we fail as leaders, is we just want that one bit more of information. We have to be 100% confident that we've got it all. And if we wait that long, it's too late. So if I believe that, then I say, well, if I fail faster, then I will succeed sooner. And that allows me to every time just get up the gumption to go out there and say, no, I don't have all the information, but this is the direction we're headed in.
Missy Park, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's our inflection point for today. We invite you to tell us your story, suggest a guest you'd like to hear from, and more at our website, inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco. Special thanks to Laura Scholes at Storyhouse Creative for giving me a room of my own on the web, Dana Smith at Dottoscope Communications for helping me spread the word, and to Paige Steinman at Veneer Studio for creative consultation. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller. Thanks for listening. Okay, here we go. Excitement, excitement. I'm so excited because the deviled eggs are over there.